Session number 10596, Reel 2.
Group Captain Mahadi, Reel 2.
Yes. Now, I'll start where I left off. Now, Harris took over, and this is my phrase, an utterly bankrupt concern. He had less than 300 aircraft. The exact figure you can get from his dispatches. I'm sorry, I'm giving you a bit of homework. You don't mind that.
No, that's right.
Less than 300 aircraft and a handful. Less, I believe, than a squadron of Stirling. At this stage, to the best of my knowledge, I don't think there was any Halifaxes. They were coming through, but not when he took over in February 42. So he was not only was he bankrupt from a point of view of ability to do anything, he was also bankrupt for the weight or what his command could deliver to the enemy, because his command was being milked by the army and the navy. The navy were borrowing in the main Whitleys, which were just as useless in the Western Desert as they were in Germany, and the army were borrowing Wimpies for the Western Desert. And so he had to do something. Had to do something quickly, and very, very soon, within weeks of him taking command, he was able to muster at the end of May. So there he had February, March, April, May. Say March, April, and the end of May. 3 months, really, to find 1,000 bombers for this historic 1,000 bomber raid, to show what could be done with strategic bombing. None of this bombing into a barrel. That came later in certain circumstances, but very few. But nothing like the area, mass area bombing, which was his trademark.
What were you doing at the beginning of 1942?
I was very, very cross. I was at Kinloss teaching people on Whitleys to fly aircrew. They all came together at Kinloss. Pilots met navigators, navigators met wireless operators and gunners, and they all came from their various training establishments, came to me, and I trained them as a bomber crew on Whitleys. And several of us, and I wasn't one, were sent with a trainee crew to take part in the 1,000 bomber raid.
Now, at the beginning of 42, was there a widespread feeling of frustration amongst the aircrew of bomber command?
Amongst certain people like myself, like certain people like Tirpitz Tate, Willie Tate, men like Jimmy Marks, these are photograph people, Cheshire, I don't know what he said when you interviewed him, but there was a general feeling amongst, what shall I say, the old lags, as Harris called us. That was the old peacetime air force that had survived a tour, that we were not finding our targets and certainly not bombing them. We knew nothing about the bomb, the Butt report, but men like Sid Bufton and Air Commodore Baker and others in Bomber Ops knew, and there were people that had survived the tour, like Willie Tate, and Jimmy Marks, and not just in Four Group, but with the Wimpies and the Hamdens, which had a very, very trying time. And certainly the Blenheim people knew that they went in daylight, and they did some damage to shipping, but nothing. After all, they carried 400-500-pound bombs. You know, it was like smacking something with a wet lettuce. Wasn't doing anything, no harm. Wasn't paying off. And so Harry said, right, my 1,000 plan, I will show the chiefs of staff, because he had to really convince the chiefs of staff, and he had to convince the war board, the air council, that the strategic offensive, because the war council had said, Harris, when they sent him off to bomber command, we will give you 3,500 heavy bombers, four engine bombers. That will be your force. When he said, look, what can I do with 300? But then he found there was 300 aircraft in strategic reserve, stuck all over the country, way up in the north. Wick, there was bombers, way up there. 300 at least. Don't know the exact figure. You know, and you'll find it easier than I can find out after 40 odd years. And another 300 split between the army in the desert and the navy in the western approaches. You see? So the whole thing was ridiculous. So he could double his force straight away. His 300 become 600. And then he got on to Beaverbrook, and he confided in Beaverbrook, and Beaverbrook was flat out. He said he believed, like Harris, he believed in the strategic concept. You know, don't bugger about with a little factory on the fringe of Cologne or Hamburg or somewhere else. Bomb the gut the place. And if you can't get old Schmidt at his bench, you get him in bed with Mrs. Schmidt. Now that's the essence of strategic bombing. And so he stops the flow to the navy and the army, and the army say, right, we agree, you can help us enormously with your strategic concept, we'll give you back all the bombers we borrowed from you. And the navy refused completely, although it tried and tried, right? I'll go back a bit. Yes. And so Harris was able to grab this strategic reserve, and that was a bit of a fight too. But then the Air Council were by this time all on Harris's side, you see. And if we had to have a bombing concept, Harris was the man to do it. And so Harris then found he got the strategic reserve. He got aircraft back from the desert, and the army were very good about this. They stopped any bombers, further bombers going, and they did send some back. The navy refused point blank to let one aircraft, despite the fact it was doing no good at all. Yes, I'll repeat. Despite the fact that the Whitleys in the Bay of Biscay were taking a very heavy toll, or the aircraft from Spain were taking a very heavy toll of the Whitleys in the Bay of Biscay and the western approaches, because they were useless, utterly useless for that sort of naval work. And so Harris builds up a force, and he has Lord Beaverbrook, the controller of aircraft production at the time. I don't think that was his title actually, but he was virtually the controller, and he put sparks under the aircraft industry. And eventually Harris was able to muster 1,040 aircraft for what he called his thousand plan. And at the end of May 42, 1040 set off from England to attack Cologne in very, very good circumstances.
Well, you were on that route?
No. I was resenting very much as being one of the most senior of the pilots at Kinloss at the time, that I wasn't chosen, and that's the wisdom of my peers at the time. But despite the fact that at 1040, Ralph Barker, his thousand plan, and again that's some homework for you. Ralph Barker's thousand plan, excellent boat. About 990, and I can't tell you the exact figure, I've forgotten the guy, actually attacked Cologne. 600 acres were devastated in the very bowels of Cologne. Cologne, the heart of Cologne, was picked out. A great deal of damage was done. It was the first time that we had ever attacked and really left an indelible mark in the center of a German city. There have been attacks previously in the Baltic, Lubeck, and Baltic towns, fire-raising attacks. And so that demonstrated, I think, 20, maybe not as many as that, 12, a dozen at least, well-known journalists and reporters went on that attack, and for the first time the world knew what strategic bombing was all about. It not only silenced the anti-Harris regime attack in Whitehall, it made an unanswerable case for the War Cabinet to give full support and build up Harris's command, which he started doing. And again, if you look at the graph in the in his dispatches, you see how it builds up. But I'll digress here. The War Cabinet, or the Chiefs of Staff, whichever you wish to call it, the War Cabinet designated 3,500 bombers, as I said earlier, for Harris's bomber offensive. Now, the last sortie of the war and the last day of the war, Harris could only muster in his command 1,660, roughly half or less than half the figure he was promised to carry out his bomber offensive, the Harris bomber offensive. So when people are arguing with me, which they do, and I encourage them to argue with me, I say, what could Harris have done, and how much shorter could the war of peace taken place if he'd had his full complement of bombers and no milking, and by now the Pathfinders in full flood, aircrew getting better and better. There was no dilution of aircrew as there were in the Luftwaffe. You see, we did our 30 sorties, or in the Pathfinders 60, you did 60 and finished, although it's on record I did two less because I was pulled out for another job. But the Luftwaffe went on until they were promoted out of operations, or they got the chop. Now, our Empire Air Training Scheme in Canada, Rhodesia, and South Africa, and I keep rubbing that in too, South Africa, they were sending us crews that just got better with more experience as the chop rate fell. And we said, well, we only need in the next 6 months 1,000 pilots, or we'll only take 800. And so the amount of experience we're getting, everything was happening on our side. Better aircraft, Pathfinder technique developing and improving all the time. Bombs were more effective. The 250 bomb became a 1,000 pound bomb with certainty. And the 1,000 pound bomb became a 12,000 pound bomb and a 22,000 pound bomb, the Grand Slam, which did for the Bierveld Viaduct. That was a five group job. And so everything's improving. 100 group, the RC, you know, radio countermeasures, the light night striking force, a force within the Pathfinder force, which did spoof attacks each side of the main attack. But I'm really going ahead of myself now. Everything got better and better for Harris in main material and everything else as it was being reduced on, and of course the advent of the invasion. And so then Harris ultimately with his 1,000 was nightly, and groups on their own were taking on a target, three group, one group, five group, and that was a particularly good group. I won't say a word against five group, because that was Noble's group, you see, and he's bigger than I am. But nevertheless, groups weren't sending 1,000, but they'd send 500, 600, 700 because then you had the mosquitoes doing their spoofing attacks, setting up Pathfinder techniques. If you're going, say, to Hanover, and this would be started in Hamburg, which is quite a distance away, 100 plus nautical miles, and then another raid down south in the Ruhr, with all the techniques, master bomber, voice on the air, calling in, and window note, you see, which started in Hamburg in mid the I'm trying to think of a code word, that, you know, the big Hamburg raid, the firestorm. You see, these are techniques developing and things, although Hamburg was a complete, trying to think of the word, it was a complete phony. The reason for it was phony. A very strong surface wind, and the Votrex, and a high proportion of incendiaries. Now you can read, there's various books. Martin Middlebrook did a book on, what was Hamburg? Can you remember the code word for it? I've forgotten it. Tremendous fire in the center, and this tremendous surface wind, and it started a vortex, and literally the center of Hamburg, and that was more than 600 acres. It was just a skeleton, and Hamburg went up to 20,000 feet ash. We couldn't take pictures for days of the Holocaust, or whatever you were like, I've forgotten now.
So
Gomorrah.
When did you first come into the bombing campaign?
In the real bombing campaign, yes. The Pathfinder campaign,
yes.
Or my second tour, the day the Pathfinder started, I was a selected pioneer. Bomber Command, Harris said, I will select. He opposed Pathfinders right up to the 15th of August. But he was very, very pro-Bennett. because Bennett had been one of his flying officers, an instructor on his flying boat squadron down at Calshot in the early 30s, 32, if you please. And so, when, forgive me, I keep this, don't I?
Yes.
When Bennett came back from having been shot down by the Tirpitz, come back from Sweden, he came back to this country, all in 4 weeks. Within a month, he was back and was given control. He was commandant of the Pathfinder force as a group captain, but it was under the control of Three Group, which was commanded by Cocky Cochran, Air Marshal Rafe Cochran, a delightful man and a very dear friend of mine. And when he left Three Group, he invited me to follow him to Five Group. But I was then, in Eight Group, I was very much the Bennett man. I believed Harris. Nothing, comme ci, comme ça with Harris. I didn't know of this niggle that Harris had with bomber operations and very personal with I'm sorry, I've forgotten his name. Ray. I'm sorry, yes. Sid Bufton. Now, this was a very personal vendetta. And it didn't do Bufton any harm, but that, again, you've got to read the bitterness of Harris. This is yet another example of a junior officer at Air Ministry overriding a commander-in-chief in the field. Now, that's the bold sentence. This is yet another example of a junior officer overriding a commander-in-chief in the field. The bitterness in that, and that bitterness extended from Harris in Bomber Command to Bufton, the whole of the period that Harris and Bufton, well, Bufton was in the ministry. And that would be, I don't know if that was the whole period, but you'll have to wait until you speak to Bufton. I would recommend, you won't get the complete bomber story until you've spoken to Bufton.
So how did you personally get the call to go into the Pathfinders? What do you remember of how the call came as far as you were concerned?
Well, I did a period 6-7 months. I nearly completed my Pathfinder tour of 60, and I was too short. But I'm sorry, was that our NAFE coming? No. The reason I was one of the elite, the original Pathfinder, selected by Bomber Command, and they did it. They did it at Bomber Command. And they picked, everybody was a bona fide second tour person. When the Pathfinder force started, we had four heavy squadrons, 7 and 83. Ninth right. The Pathfinder was formed by hiving off a squadron from each of the group. Three group gave 7 squadron, four group gave 35 squadron, five group gave 83 squadron, and I can't think what the fourth squadron. One group gave 156 squadron. So there was the Pathfinder force, four heavy squadrons, and they couldn't have been more of a mishmash. Three different types of aircraft: Wellington from one group, Stirling from three group, Halifax from Five Group, and Five Group gave Lancasters, and Four Group gave Halifax. So all Four Group with a different operational capacity. It couldn't have been more difficult if it had been arranged that way. I rather tend to see or feel that the crabbed hand of command, and when I always want to say, or I want to draw away my opinion from blaming the commander-in-chief, I generally say command. And so the command itself, who were just like Harris, bitterly opposed to the advent of the Pathfinders, made us operate the night we were formed. Crews were coming in the morning of the 15th and of August 42, and they were operating the same night on Flensburg, which was an absolute disaster because of the weather. Weather from 20,000 feet right down to the ground. And it was a complete debacle. And great joy was generated in the command and outside the command because of this phony Pathfinders, these people that were going to find the target. Now, we were only Pathfinders by name. I came down from Kinloss, where the night before I'd been training crews on Whitleys. I come into a complete new crew in a strange airplane. I'd never flown. I had a run round in the afternoon. But that didn't bother me. I was a very experienced pilot. Experienced in hours. But I wasn't experienced as a pathfinder. None of us were. We were makey learn. And that Flensburg trip was really desperate. Anyway.
Were you actually on the Flensburg trip?
Oh, yes. Yes.
What do you actually remember of it?
I remember just cloud in a Stirling, and we operated at 12,000 feet in a Stirling. Later on, Bennett got us up to 18,000 feet because he reduced the reserve petrol, he reduced the number of ammunition we took for the guns, and he took out all the armor plating. We had 7/8 of an inch door between the